History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Hour two on Inside the Clubhouse coming at you alongside Bruce Levine. I'm Mike Esposito filling in for David this week and glad to be here. And Bruce, time for us to head on out to the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sportsbook, for some fun baseball discussion.
Absolutely. We bring in our good friend Ryan Dempster to talk some baseball. Ryan doing so much with MLB and with the Marquee Network and just about anything that he wants to do out there. Demp, great to have you on this morning. How are you doing today?
Good morning. I'm doing great, thanks.
Yeah, let's start with your Chicago Cubs and the way they've been playing baseball the last few weeks here. What is, in your opinion, the major reason for the turnaround on the way that they've been playing?
I think just growth. You have development of some younger players that have come up and get an opportunity to just have a little bit of experience and get a little bit better. Pitching has been better. Starting pitching has been a little bit better. When Miley and Stroman and Smiley all went down, then you have guys thrown into the fire a little bit and have to kind of navigate through that, but they've been pitching better. And I think, that's kind of where it all starts, but then just the growth of the young players that have come up as well.
Ryan, and certainly we saw that last night. We've seen it really all season with few exceptions. But Keegan Thompson, certainly, in my mind, one of the, if not the main bright spots for the Cubs in the first half. And it's really nice after what we saw. He got his feet wet last year to see him establish himself this year.
Yeah, I mean, he just did a tremendous job again last night. And, he had the kind of hiccup during the year earlier a month ago or so when he had back-to-back starts against the Orioles in Baltimore and then at Yankee Stadium. And other than that, he's been really, really good. He was tremendous out of the bullpen. He gave them an opportunity to manage his innings a little bit, with the shortened spring training and kind of build him up into the point where you put him in the starting rotation. And you just love his mentality. He's a bulldog out there. He goes right after guys. He finds out where his fastball sits. Does it play right away? Can they hit it? If not, I'll keep throwing it. And then can kind of expand off that. And as he continues to just get better and better and develop, I said it last night, I think this guy's a potential all-star in the making. And he's got A-plus stuff. And his other pitches need to come along, but that'll take some time. And he's going to have some bumps and bruises along the way, too. He's going to have some tough outings, but you just love what you've seen out of them. And if you're the Chicago Cubs and, David Ross and Tommy Hotovy and everybody, this is what you dream of, getting a guy with a good young arm like that who has that bulldog type mentality and put him in your rotation and find out what you get. And right now you're getting some pretty elite stuff when he's in there.
The strange case of National League All-Star starter catcher Wilson Contreras and the Chicago Cubs. Watching Contreras, Demp, what is your perspective of a guy that has handled this year so beautifully as far as on the field, hitting the ball hard, catching great games, off the field, talking at nauseam to anybody that wants to talk to him about his free agency, how he wants to stay with the Chicago Cubs, how it's a great organization. He's been here for 14 years. How the fact that he's, arguably the best catcher in the National League. And for some reason, there seems to be a hesitation to getting a deal done between the two sides, and he may be traded here within the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think he's done an incredible job of it all. It's not easy to go through when you're going through these things. He's been a part of the organization for 14 years now. And, what he's done on the field has been tremendous. But you're right, how he's handled it all off the field. I thought what he said to Taylor McGregor last night when he was asked, what he's most proud of, this year, and he said that I'm the same person every day. And he really is. He comes in and he just goes about his business. He's had growth as a human being and as a young player over the past few years. To be a guy that was a young guy to come up into a veteran, you know, laden team in 2016 and be a part of all that, and then to, you know, be the guy who's the veteran now. And he's handled it all really well. And I think it just shows, you know, unfortunately, baseball and professional sports in general, there's a huge business aspect to them all now. There, the times where it's like, yeah, you know, okay, it's baseball, but there's a little bit of business as well. It's not so much anymore. It is. There's a lot of things that go into it, and teams treat things differently than they used to, and that's just how it is across the board. And, you know, hopefully they'll figure out a way to make it work, and if they don't, you know, he'll end up somewhere where somebody will be really happy to have that type of quality player, and not only that, a human that's, you know, a quality type person as well. So whatever happens for Wilson, I wish him the best. I hope it's here, but I'm happy he gets to start the All-Star game, and hopefully his brother Willem is joining him as well.
Having been a big league pitcher of quality depth like you were, and knowing differences that catchers make for you or they don't, can you tell us, you know, behind the, you know, the scenes, why you hear people whisper, well, he's so much better than he was at calling games. He's so much better with his setup. He's so much better at blocking balls. He throws better than anybody. But we still have some questions about whether he is the guy that we want behind the plate developing our young pitchers. Is he the guy? I scratch my head, you know, with that one, and I don't know it. So I turn to you, a guy who is a big league pitcher, to give us a little bit more insight as to what that all might mean.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, when guys first come into the league, even myself as a pitcher, you know, you're the young wild horse that needs to be reined in a little bit, but at the same time, you also enjoy that energy and watching that energy of that young player, so you don't want to, like, do too much to rein it in. And early on, you know, when Wilson came up, it was, you know, a ton of ability, a ton of, you know, the ability to throw guys out when they're stealing bases, and the energy that he could play. I mean, he could feel a swinging bunt that was halfway up the third baseline and turn around and throw the guy out at first. And he had all these different tools, and it was exciting, but sometimes, you know, controlling himself behind the plate, with whether that's with an umpire or whether that's, you know, calm enough so that your pitcher feels calm when they're on the mound. These things all just take a little bit of time. We all want things to be perfect when guys come in, but they're not. And it took growth and it took development. And he gets to that point where, A, he's, you know, still the same guy as when it comes to throwing out, you know, but develops as a pitch blocker, develops as a pitch, you know, how to frame pitches and how to bring balls and present them as strikes, how to call games. You know, he's learning a league and hitters and who chases what and how guys go about their approach when they're at bat. All of these things, as you develop and you age and get experience, get better. And I think he's got better and better at those things from when he first came into the league to now. And whether or not a lot of those quote-unquote labels or things that people might have seen as, you know, things you need to be better at, well, guess what? He got better at them. You know, and he's fresh and he's had the ability to get some rest because of the DH and a lot of these things that he's just evolved and become better and better. And I know that, you know, he's also aged, so people go, oh, well, he's getting older, you know, but yeah, he's still got those good, fresh, young legs, and he looks as energetic as ever back there. And I think he's just done a tremendous job. And like I said, I hope it's here, but if he ends up somewhere else, somebody's going to get a really, really stud major league catcher.
Ryan Dempster, our guest here on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. And Ryan, next weekend, All-Star weekend, I wanted to ask you about that. You're a guy who experienced that as a player. And what, you know, what will Wilson Contreras, what will Tim Anderson, what will all the other Chicago All-Stars that might make it, and the other guys, what is that experience like as a player? You go in there, you're obviously excited about it, certainly, but how does that all work? You go in there, especially as a first-timer. How would you go in there and explain that to people who've never gotten to experience that?
It's blurry. It's very blurry and fast. You know, it's exciting. You know, it's a proud moment because you are, especially these guys, you get voted in, man. You're the starter of the All-Star game. But, like, you go there you know, you get there on Sunday night after that game, and then you go from there to, you know, your family comes in and friends are coming in, whatever it is, your agents, and it's busy. It's just, and then you're to the ballpark on Monday for the home run derby and the parade. All these different things that happen, it's just, it's one after another, and you don't really have a lot of time to process it all in the moment because you're just going through it all. And it's go to the room and sign all the autographed memorabilia that you need to take care of, all the balls for all the guys, and bats and hats and jerseys, and, you know, get your shiny new spikes from whoever you're, you know, you wear cleats with, and your new swag that you're going to, your drip that you're going to wear for your appearance out on the home run derby and the batting practice. And it's awesome. It is like literally like you're kind of almost at like a really awesome or a really, you know, intense concert for 2 days. It's just fast. It's furious. You don't have a lot of time to sleep. And you just hope that you get in there and you get a chance to get an opportunity in the All-Star game to make an impact and do something special, hit a home run if you're a position player, strike the side out if you're a pitcher, do those kind of things, help your team win, and get to compete against the best players in the game. And then all of a sudden, boom, it's over, and you're back to where you're supposed to be for your first game after the All-Star break. So there's not a lot of time to kind of reflect. I feel like when I went through it, I did the reflecting kind of after the season, like, whoa, that was pretty cool, because when it's all going on, it is fast and furious. It is very blurry.
Kemp, how are you on rules? How do you like the man on second base when they started it? How do you like it now? How do you like the idea that they're going to change defensive shifts so that people are going to stay on one side or the other? How are you on the pitch clock that's coming next year?
Rule-wise, I'm not a super big fan of the runner on second base. Like, I get it from why they want to do it. I just don't really see the need for it, you know. It definitely is cutting down those super long extra inning games for sure. But there's other ways you can do that too. Approach when you're hitting, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, it is what it is. I don't know if it's going anywhere anytime soon. The one I love, Bruce, the pitch clock I love. I was a guy who worked quick, so that would have never been an issue to me. It wouldn't have been something like, come on, you know, I don't want this thing to come. I love it. I tell you, I went down to Charleston. My wife and I were down, and we went to a Charleston River Dogs the opening night. They were actually playing Myrtle Beach. And they, between the pitch clock and the hitter staying in the box, it just felt like there was constant flow, constant action in the game. There was no lulls. There was no this guy circling behind around the plate forever. It was get the ball, get on the rubber, and throw pitches. And there was a lot of really good flow to it. And, you know, I feel like the game's come to this, like, slow down. We have to collect our mental thoughts before every single pitch, the hitter getting out of the box and fixing his batting gloves in a 3-0 count with nobody on base. Like, it's just slowed down too much. So I love the idea of kind of conditioning these guys at the minor league level so that when they come up to the big league level and they get in there, it's here we go. And I would think that a lot of pitchers feel the same way. I think probably if anybody has a problem with it, it'll probably be the hitters, because they like to kind of step out when they have to, but the flow of it all, moving the game along, it's great.
Well, Dempin, I almost feel like that's, I don't want to say coming for sure, but I mean, they certainly seem to be encouraged by the exact results that you just described, that shaves about 20 minutes off of your average game time. So if you picture an MLB game going from 3 hours to, instead of 3 hours, 240, and I know people would love that. But not only that, I think the more important part is the flow of the game, right? The connectivity you feel to the game. You're not sitting waiting, you know, as you said, when somebody adjusts his batting gloves. I would love to see that in the big leagues. I think it's coming. I hope so.
Yeah, well, and you're right. Like, listen, I love baseball. If you love baseball, what's the hurry to get it over with? I understand what you're saying. So I love baseball, so let's play baseball. I don't love sitting there for 35 minutes while no balls are put in play, because all it is walk, strikeouts. Like, I want some action, and it promotes action. It promotes guys swinging the bat. It promotes guys pitching with some consistency and flow. And so guess what happens? They get in rhythms and they're throwing more strikes and they're throwing the ball, you know, where they want to throw it. It just promotes a lot of really good things, and it keeps people engaged into the game, where all of a sudden, you know, they don't feel like, you know, like there's times where you can get up, go get a beer and a hot dog, come back, and sit down in your seat, and nothing's changed. Nothing's happened. Nobody's got on base. And so I think it promotes a lot of good things, like you said, and I think it's a really great thing they're doing it.
Ryan Dempster, our guest on Inside the Clubhouse. He's Mike. I'm Bruce. We're here for you every week, 52 weeks out of the year, talking baseball and Inside the Clubhouse and the Score. And, Ryan, my question to you is this. You see bigger, stronger, outstanding-looking athletes. No doubt that they're great athletes. They're strong. They look fantastic walking around. Are baseball players training for the wrong sports? And I mean by that, with all the soft tissue injuries, is it obvious to somebody that looks at sports, that has played sports like yourself for your whole life, that guys are too lean, that they're doing too much weightlifting in wrong areas, that the continued injuries are all about training for the wrong sport, not baseball?
That's hard to know. I get what you're saying, Bruce, and I do understand a little bit, and I think sometimes that can be a little bit of the case. I think when you combine the training with the way that hitting and pitching is taught nowadays, mm-hmm. is explosive. Be explosive as you can, right? Drive line, take a baseball. We don't care if you throw it for a strike. Let's see how hard we can throw it. Like let's throw it as hard as we can. Let's post a video of you throwing 98 miles an hour, even though it hit the upper right-hand part of the batting tunnel. You know, like, that's what it's all about. It's about that kind of explosiveness. How much can you coil as a hitter, get that coil, and then explode so that you can drive the ball and get some slug percentage and get paid for that? So when you have that, you're bound to have some, you know, soft tissue injuries. You're bound to have pulled muscles because you're playing that way. You're not playing with fluidity. The days of the delivery, like, you know, why has Max Scherzer been able, for the most part, until this year, stay healthy all the time? Look at the flow of his delivery. Sure, he's got a different arm action than most people, but he's got a lot of flow in his delivery that keeps him healthy. The mm-hmm. the kinetic energy that he's sending towards home plate is that, instead of being very static and then explode, it's right, almost like building up the energy the whole time. So yeah, I think that's a big reason why we see those injuries. We train for it. We teach that way to throw, to hit now, and it's just a recipe for guys constantly pulling muscles or tweaking something.
Nothing is more aggravating to me than not being able to watch all these great players play and when they get hurt. And I just think that when you look at these guys and you realize what you said, you added some real deep thought and process to this. You know, what's wrong with just training the way baseball players used to train? And that is run and run some more. Do some light weight work for your wrists, your forearms. You know, stay strong, but you know, have a little fat on your body and be able to stay and play season. It's just obviously.
Well, you know, not only that, Bruce, but are you with me?
Yep, we got you, Ryan.
Not only that, where's the time off? You know, like, I'm talking,
right,
I'm not talking
right.
about, and not just at the big league level. These kids, okay, and I say kids because I'm older now and I can say that, but this generation that is now playing is a generation that grew up playing 8U travel, 9U travel, 10U travel, 11U travel, 12U travel, 13U travel. These kids never, when have they ever put down their baseball gloves to take a break and just do something else for a little bit? It's like they got to play their fall ball, and then they got to have their training sessions, and they got to, now they go into professional baseball. They've had way more mileage on their bodies, on their arms, on their legs than most of anybody that I ever played with. When the season ended, you know, for me, most of the time in October 1st, I was done. You know, I had the chance to be in the playoffs a few times. I didn't pick my glove back up until Christmas time, you know, to play catch. And that was, then I didn't even get on the mound until a couple weeks before spring training. And then I went to spring training and I just eased into it. Now you show up to spring training and you go to the pitch lab and you got to throw 95 miles an hour on your first bullpen session. and figure out how the shape of your breaking ball is going. There's a lot of things that just kind of lead to all this, and it's like they don't get the break that they used to this generation. They just haven't since they were little kids. And I think so when you put those mileage, just like anything, if that's your car and you drive it that hard for that long, eventually things are going to start breaking down and you never truly get the break that they should get all the way down to when they're little kids. And that's not changing anytime soon. So this is something that I think we're just going to live with for a long time.
Yep. Ryan, it's actually funny because I coach 10U baseball for my son's team. And that is one of the debates we have with our kids, right? Is that, you know, we're baseball a lot, but we still want them to be kids and enjoy other sports and, you know, do other things. But it's certainly a difficult thing when you're on a travel team and you're playing and there's all these tournaments, but it's definitely different. It's definitely a different way of growing up than I think what all of us on this interview here think, right?
Well, and like what happens, they say, well, if he doesn't do fall ball, then he's going to fall behind the other kids. Really? Is he? He's 10 years old. He's 12 years old. Like, are they going to fall behind? Maybe he'll be better at infield if he plays soccer because his footwork will be so incredible. Maybe he'll be better at, you know, catcher if he plays basketball too because his ability to spring on his legs will be better. Like, there's tons of people. Fergie Jenkins played for the Harlem Globetrotters, and he only managed to throw 260 innings a year for, you know, 20 years. So there's ways about it that I think we've got so specialized that now, like, we've just trained the body that way, and unfortunately, you know, it happens. But it is what it is, and, you know, I wish that they would get a little bit more of a break, you know, just, and even in general, even just some of the kids do, like, in pro ball, you know, they go and they sign, and then it's to extend his spring training, and then it's instruction leagues after, then it's mini camps, like, in January. There's not much time off, and that time off is so vital. It allows your muscles to heal, allows your body to heal, allows your mind to heal, and it allows for some really good growth physically, I think, that can turn, you know, kind of boys into men, can physically turn you into a man where you're able to go out there for 162 and stay healthy for 162, like guys used to do all the time. They used to play 162 games, a lot of them pretty regularly, and it just doesn't happen as much anymore.
Demp, we appreciate your time. Fantastic stuff. And it always is with you. Enjoying your work tremendously in the Marquee Network, MLB Network. Keep up. All the best to you and Kelly. I know you have some good news coming really quickly here. So all the best to you and the family. Thanks for taking some time with Mike and I today on Inside the Clubhouse.
Hey, you bet, Mike. Bruce, my pleasure, man. Thanks for having me on.
Have a great day. Ryan Dempster. Mike, you know, he hit on some things that are really, you know, essential as far as why baseball becomes work for kids, why kids burn out on the game of baseball by the time they're 18, 19 years old, why they have Tommy John surgeries twice before they're 22 or 23. You know, take some time out, enjoy other sports, you know, do something else, you know, those tournament games and the travel teams are two-pronged for me, Mike. Number one, create too much tension, too much stress on young kids. And two, it eliminates the other young kids who are marginally good players, but all of a sudden you're not in tournament ball. You feel like you're not good enough to play anymore. It turns them away from the game of baseball. All bad news for me.
It's a strange thing, Bruce, because I grew up, as we just talked about, right, playing exactly as we described. You'd play baseball in the summer, you'd play, you know, football or soccer in the fall, and you'd play basketball in the winter, and you'd go circle around, and you'd come back to whatever, and the focus wasn't always as intense, certainly, as what it is now, and now I see the other end of it. I coach my son's team. We are on travel ball. We actually have our league tournament this afternoon, starting this afternoon, and it's a lot. It is. There's no doubt about it. You want your kids to have fun. You want them to enjoy it, but you also don't want to put all the pressures on them. It's a tough path.
It's become more about the parents and what they want for their kid rather than letting the kid just have a good time, play the game, and find his own level. Mike, we got to take another break. When we come back pretty soon, Jared Banner, the Chicago Cubs player development guru, will be joining us. your phone calls, 312-644-6767. This is Inside the Clubhouse and the Score, 670thescore.com.
As the MLB trade deadline approaches, both sides of town have some decisions to make. So, who should stay and who should go?
Should I stay or should I go now?
With Bruce Levine and David Haw on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
If I go, there will be trouble.
And we are back. As you hear the clash, it is time for Should He Stay or Should He Go? Bruce, we're going to generally talk about the White Sox, and as we mentioned earlier in the show, hard to believe we have gotten here, but should the Sox be sellers at the deadline? What do you think?
The Seven Brothers truck is pulling up right now on the south side. I don't know. We didn't name a player here because it's collective right now. Who do the White Sox add to this team to make this run? And more importantly, who is traded away from this team? In other words, is there a guy that can bring back something that the Chicago White Sox need going forward here other than, you know, someone to help them win? Is there a subtraction to the addition that you want for this team? In other words, is there somebody on this team that we'd be better off playing somewhere else right now? That is the question I have for you, Mike.
Yeah, it's a tricky one because, I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, they are so all in with this roster. That is the frustrating and difficult part here, right? I mean, the White Sox have spent years building to get to this point and then adding in the offseason what you thought were, you know, the complimentary pieces, your Kendall Graveman, your Joe Kelly, who we talked about earlier. They bring back Lance Lynn on an extension. They have the pieces built to win right now. If you start trading pieces, or if you think you need, maybe you think you need different pieces, and maybe that's where Rick Hahn's brain goes right now. I don't know. And I mean, listen, we know Sox fans are frustrated with how things are being managed. I don't know if a manager change is something that's in the cards. I doubt it, right? I mean, it certainly doesn't seem like that would be something that would happen, Bruce. But
I'm looking for some on-field impact, Mike.
Sure,
I'm looking for
on-field
impact. Do you bring in Wilson Contreras? You know that Grandal is still out there rehabbing. He's going to be rehabbing till after the break. Do you count on him coming back 100% to be able to help you from the catcher spot, from the DH spot, the left-handed bat that you need? Will he do will he duplicate what he did last year by having a very slow first half and then basically carrying the offense himself with his powerful left-handed side swing in the second half? You know, again, this team needs an infusion of some kind, some type of energy infusion. It might have to come from the outside. You know, does Contreras make sense for the White Sox?
I would, if I'm the White Sox, I would love to have Wilson Contreras, because not only, we mentioned all the things he brings to the Cubs locker room and the leadership and the Cubs clubhouse and what he represents for the North side. If he can replicate that on the south side, not only is he a great clubhouse guy, not only is he a great player on the field, a great hitter, he can DH for you, he can catch for you, but he's also bringing those intangibles, and I think that is something that the White Sox can surely use right now. So if I'm the White Sox, I know you don't always see a ton of Cubs-Sox trades. We see the occasional one, the Craig Kimbrel last year. We had the Cease and Quintana deal with Eloy Jimenez in there a few years back. But if I'm Rick Hahn, yeah, that's one of my first calls.
Well, adding young players would be what it's all about for the Chicago Cubs. We're going to talk to the guy who runs the player personnel for the minor leagues for the Chicago Cubs, Jared Banner, joining us next on Inside the Clubhouse. He's Mike Esposito. I'm Bruce Levine. You're listening to Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score, 670thescore.com.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
We're glad you're with us here on Inside the Clubhouse. One more segment for us, and we are certainly excited to talk to our next guest, Bruce, who joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book.
Vice President and in charge of the minor leagues for the Chicago Cubs, Jared Banner, nice enough to take some time out on a Saturday morning to join us on Inside the Clubhouse. Jared, good morning. I know it's an exciting time for you with a lot of prospects moving up, a lot of them helping out at the major league level. Must be some good vibes going along in the offices at Clark and Addison.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, it's a pleasure having you on, Jared. I wonder, you know, with the ascension of some of these guys that we've watched right now, especially when it comes to some of the young pitchers like Steele and Thompson moving along, what's the feeling like in the organization right now where, you know, an organization that struggled for so long to develop pitching is starting to really do a good job in that area, you know, guys like Morrell coming up. I mean, there has to be some really good feelings going on with you guys right now.
I think it's a testament to our development at the minor league level and at the major league level. There's a great staff up in the big leagues that really works to hone these guys and their crafts once they get up there. And there's a big staff down under that works really hard to get them ready to get up there initially. And like I said, that group up there helps to keep them there.
Jared, we know the planning for a draft is year-round and the work never stops, but we're right up against it now with the Cubs picking seventh in next week's draft. How do things heat up here in the final week for the organization?
Well, I can tell you this. No one is more prepared than Dan Kantrovitz and his staff in amateur scouting. A lot of people putting in a lot of time all year, and it culminates in a big week like this one, and obviously our goal is to draft some impact big leaguers, and I think we will.
When you look at the ascension of Christopher Morrell, and we see not only the quality of his baseball tools on the field, but the individual himself and the fun nature that he has and the energy he brings, when your front office sits down with you and talks about bringing a kid from Double A like Morrell, what are those discussions like? Because that is a leap from Double A to the major leagues, and then you know, being able to project that for the people you work with, Jared.
Yeah, so just seeing Morrell, he's obviously a player with great makeup, and I think that stands out first and foremost. And by the way, I want to give Louis L. Howe and his international staff a lot of credit. They went down there and found the talent that he has, and a lot of coaches that put a lot of time and effort into developing him over the year. But this year, it was just more about there was a need at the major league level. He has great makeup, great versatility. We thought he'd be able to handle the transition. Obviously, normally you'd have a guy spend some time at AAA, but we felt like he was an exception and he could come up and help immediately, and he's proven us right.
Talking with Jared Banner, the Cubs Director of Player Personnel, and Jared, you've been around the game your whole life from both a player and now as a executive, a front office executive. How does that shape how you see this, how you deal with some of the pressures and some of the things with the minor league system and with some of these prospects? You've been there, right? You understand how all of this works.
Well, we always try to take an evidence-based approach to what we do. Obviously, every person that's involved in the game has their own personal experiences that we reach back on. But you know, ultimately, the information we gather, the data we have, we try to let that drive our decision-making. We have a lot of really strong personnel in the R&D space, and they do a lot of hard work. So it's a group effort in many ways, and it's about synergy and collecting all the information we can and then making good decisions.
Speaking of good decisions, you know, when you guys do bring players from level to level, and it's most fascinating to watch a player, you know, ascend from low A to high A to Double A, to eventually either the major leagues or Triple A. When you have a guy like Pete Crow Armstrong, who is really seems to be jumping on top of and passing those barriers that young players have to deal with, is it a player-by-player type evaluation, or is there an organization philosophy about what has to be accomplished before you move a player up like a Pete Crow Armstrong?
It's a combination of both. We definitely have KPIs that we pay attention to, but every player is different. We try to look at each individual case and what is it that they need and where's the best place for them to accomplish that goal. Where's the best place for them to develop at that specific moment? And sometimes that means being conservative and holding the guy back a little bit, and sometimes that means being aggressive and pushing him forward.
Jared Banner, our guest.
I'm sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
No, we were going to ask more about Armstrong, so Bruce, we'll cede the floor to you there, my friend.
Absolutely. When you look at Armstrong right now, you know, can you tell the Cub fans what they can expect as they watch this guy move up in the minor leagues and what some of his strengths are at this particular point in time of his game?
Yeah, I think what really makes him somewhat special is that he can do everything on the field really well, right? He can hit, he can hit for power, he can defend, he can throw, he can run, he can impact the game in so many ways. He's a really exciting player to watch. He's a great athlete, and the Cub fans are going to fall in love with him one day.
Jared, as the trade deadline approaches and, you know, the Cubs are active or we'll see what they end up doing in terms of transactions around the trade deadline, how closely, how much back and forth goes on between, you know, Jed Hoyer and yourself and the rest of the group in terms of, you know, players that you're actively trying to get, players that you don't want to move, et cetera, as all the pieces of the puzzle fit together?
I think with all our decision-making, whether it's at the deadline or in the draft or in spring training, whatever it may be, we just try to gather all the information that we can. We have great infrastructures in place to gather it. We have really smart people involved and to analyze that information. And then we come together and think about our short-term goals, our long-term goals, and then make what we consider good, strong decisions.
Where are we at with Jordan Wicks, and how is he progressing in the minor leagues? And, you know, there was some thought, mostly media-driven, Jared, that he could be a quick arrival to the major leagues. We all love to talk and write about things like that. We you know, sometimes don't understand the process even a mature kid like Wicks has of making it to the major leagues. Where is he at right now, and how is he moving along in his development stages?
He's actually having a great year. He's in high A, 30% strikeout rate, 5% walk rate, so that 6-to-1 ratio is pretty good. His ground ball rate's really high, so he's doing a lot of really impressive things that we look for. So I would expect him to move pretty quickly in the short term here.
Last few minutes with Jared Banner, the Cubs director of player personnel. And Jared, as you do your work and you oversee the minor leagues and you look at different players, how often are you out on the road traveling? I know COVID probably impacted some of that, and how much of that is data driven? I know you've talked about that throughout our interview here, that it's data-driven. But how much do you and your team get down to the various teams and check things out?
A lot. I've been to several of our affiliates a couple times already this year, but at least once to each location. And obviously I'm on the phone with our staff and our players, you know, on a daily basis. So in player development, kind of have to keep your ear to the ground, stay connected pretty closely, because there's always something happening when you have 200 players or so. So,
Jared, last one for me, and Mike and I really appreciate your time today. Give us a status on Brendan Davis. We're hearing that, you know, after his back surgery, he's turned the corner a little bit. Do you have a timeline on some of his movement going forward here?
Yeah, he's progressing through baseball activities pretty soon here, so we're hopeful to see him back on the field in August at some point. Probably to start, he'll play in some ACL games, and then we'll move him up from there as he gets comfortable and in rhythm.
Jared, we appreciate your time very much. Thanks very much, and congratulations on the system, the way the players are moving there. It looks like a lot of fun time for Cub fans to be able to look at those players and project them toward the major leagues. Thanks again, and have a great day. We appreciate your time.
That's all you guys have for me? I was just getting in my groove, guys.
we'll have to have you on again soon, because I have a lot of questions about Killian and Casey and hers. There's a lot of really fine young players that are coming through.
That's what I was expecting today.
Sure. Well, I mean, look. I mean, the good news is, Jared, there's so many good stories to talk about with the young Cub players. So from that perspective, hopefully you'll have time for us again very soon.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jared.
Thanks. Have.
Bye-bye.
But it's funny, Bruce. That's Jared. Jared Banner.
We asked the wrong questions. Yeah, we asked the wrong questions.
That's a first for me. I mean, that's the first time I've ever had a guest say, "Well, you're letting me go. What? I got more to say here. Come on." That was awesome.
Yeah, and it was a quick 10 minutes with him. But there are so many, prospects to talk about with the Chicago Cubs right now that we will have to bring them back.
No doubt. Well, and you mentioned Pete Crow Armstrong, yeah, Bruce. I was going to ask him about that. He's the Cubs representative in the Futures game. That's going to be exciting to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. We have people to thank today, including Jim Callis, the draft guru, Ryan Dempster from the Marquee and MLB networks, and of course, Jared Banner of the Chicago Cubs, head of player development. Cesar Perez did a great, great job of producing the show and dealing with a lot of issues. Mike, always fun to do a show with you. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine, and also at 670thescore.com, where I write both Cubs and Sox all week long. Mike, guess who's next?
Yeah, it's some Saturday suckage coming up next, Bruce, and pleasure to be with you as always. We'll actually make it two in a row next week. David will have next Saturday off. I'll be in for him again, and thanks to our guests. Thanks to Caesar, who did some great work there. And right, coming up next, some Saturday suckage for your listening enjoyment. Steve Rosenblum will have you here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.